Hey, weird family, Morbid Makers here with another morbid tale. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Krista.
And today we want to start by saying,
Happy Mardi Gras, y'all. Today is Fat Tuesday, and we'd like to give you a little background into Mardi Gras before getting into our morbid tale. Mardi Gras has a dark beginning, rooted in paganism and has racial ties. But that is a tale for another day.
For now, we want to talk about the Mardi Gras we know today. Mardi Gras is French for Fat Tuesday. It begins on Epiphany, also known as Three Kings Day or Twelfth Night, and ends on Fat Tuesday. During this time, parades, indulgences, and debauchery is celebrated before the fasting of Lent. Two of the big traditions are King Cake and the parades. This time of year is the only acceptable time for people in Louisiana to feast on King Cake. The cake is decorated in Mardi Gras purple for justice, green for faith, and gold for purple.
And sugar for my tummy.
Yes, yummy.
And the parades started in New Orleans in 1837. The first floats appeared in 1857 with the Mystic Crew of Kumas, the oldest crew in the city that is still active today. And the Rex, or King of Carnival, started as a tradition in 1872. Which is again still celebrated today.
And this brings us to our morbid tale of the Axeman of New Orleans.
On May 23rd, 1918, a man drew a chisel from his pocket, placed it on the door, and began removing the panel. Laying the removed panel on the floor, he slides to the opening of the door. Sneaking into the home's bedroom, he produces a straight razor, slitting the couple's throat. He slit the woman's throat so severely that her head was nearly severed from her shoulders. He then bashed their heads in with an axe to conceal the cause of death. He changed out of his bloody clothes, leaving them at the scene. Then he went out the way he came.
The couple was Joseph and Catherine Maggio, and they were the Axeman's first victims. They, like many of the Axeman victims, were an Italian-American couple. The police were called quickly to the scene. They ruled out robbery as a cause, as money and valuables were still in the home. They found the killer's bloody clothes at the scene as well.
Too bad DNA testing wasn't a thing back then, because they could have caught him quickly. But since it wasn't, the police could only go off of what they saw at the scene and testimony. They found the bloody straight razor in a neighbor's lawn. Through questioning, they found out that the straight razor belonged to Andrew Maggio, Joseph's brother, who took it from his barbershop 2 days prior to hone out a nick in the blade. Not only was it the brother's razor blade that was suspicious, the fact that he lived in the apartment next door made him even more suspicious. He became the police's number one suspect, but was ruled out when he didn't back down from his story that he was intoxicated when he arrived home late, and his accounts of an unknown man lurking near the residence prior to the murder.
Andrew was not the only suspect. A message written in chalk near the couple's home was found. It read, "Miss Joseph Maggio will sit up tonight. Just write Miss Tony." Investigators immediately questioned several people, but they were all released due to lack of evidence.
All was quiet for a month until the morning of June 27, 1918. Louis Bessemer, a grocer, and his mistress, Harriet Lowe, were attacked. They were discovered after the store was not open that morning. Mr. Bessemer and his mistress stayed in the quarters in the back of the store. When discovered, the police deduced Bessemer was struck with an axe above his right temple, and Mrs. Lowe was hacked over her left ear.
And they were still alive, which is crazy. Like the last attack, many were questioned and one was arrested, but released due to lack of evidence.
What's sad was that even though the crime made the paper, the thing the public focused on was that Bessemer had a mistress, which became the scandal. And since Mrs. Lowe's face was partially paralyzed due to the attack, she had surgery on August 5th in order to correct it. She died 2 days later, but before dying, she stated she thought it was Mr. Bessemer that attacked her. He was then charged with her murder and served 9 months in prison before he was acquitted on May 1st, 1919.
On the same day Miss Lowe was in surgery, Miss Edward Schneider, who was 8 months pregnant, suffered a brutal attack. While sleeping, a man slid over her and began bashing in her head repeatedly. But she survived. This time, the husband nor the family members were suspected, but this was the first time the police made it public that they suspected that these attacks may be connected.
Finally, I mean, I'm not going to lie, with the first murders, the brother did look really suspicious. But at this time, not only did the victims have a common attacker, they were mostly Italian-American immigrants, and also many of them grocers. But he didn't stop there. Just 5 days after he attacked Mrs. Snyder, Joseph Romano, another grocer, was attacked. Again, he was sleeping in his room when the axemen came in and took an axe to his head. Mr. Romano lived with his nieces, and they woke up when they heard the commotion. They ran to the room, finding their uncle bleeding and the assailant fleeing from the scene. Even though Mr. Romano initially survived, he died 2 days later due to head trauma.
Man, it would have been nice if the girls were able to see his face.
Yes.
But they didn't. They did, however, give the description of a dark-skinned, heavy-set man who wore a dark suit and a slouched hat. Again, like the previous attacks, the scene was ransacked, but nothing was taken and the killer used the owner's hatchets or blades and the panels from the doors or windows were chiseled away to gain entry.
Since the killer didn't steal anything in any of the scenes, people began wondering why the axe murderer chose these victims. Rumors began spreading that since a lot of the victims were Italian-American, it could be mob-related. But this rumor was never substantiated. The fear was real nonetheless, and people began carrying loaded shotguns, and family members took turns staying up at night to watch over their loved ones. The people were determined to protect themselves, and it must have worked, since the next attack didn't happen until March 10th, 1919.
The Axeman struck again, attacking Charles Cortimigliato, another Italian immigrant grocer. He lived with his family, Rosie, and 2-year-old daughter, Mary. Rosie had awakened to find her husband struggling with a large man who was striking him with an axe. When Charles fell to the floor, the axeman turned to Rosie and her daughter. Begging for her and her daughter's lives, the axeman brought the axe down to both of them. A neighbor heard the commotion, and when he arrived, he saw Charles lying in a pool of blood, Rosie standing with a serious head wound, and little Mary deceased in her arms. The couple was alive.
Once Rosie was well enough to talk, she stated that the attack was made by the neighbor that found them and his son. Their names were Lorlando and Frank Giordano. I am so sorry with these names, guys. They're a little crazy. But Lorlando was a sickly 69-year-old man who was too poor of health to attack the couple. And his son was too big to fit through the panel in the back door. Not gonna lie, this kind of sounds like the story of the three bears. He was too big. He was too sick. Okay. Anyways, let's get serious. Also, Charles stated that it wasn't those men who attacked him.
But even so, the two were arrested. Frank was sentenced to hang and his father to life in prison. Charles then divorced his wife, and about a year later, Rosie came clean, saying she falsely accused the men out of jealousy and spite. Since her testimony was the only thing holding them in jail, the two were released.
What a horrible woman.
Yes.
But this attack brought fear back to New Orleans, and the people began arming themselves once again. The police believe all the crimes were committed by the same person and called him, and I quote, a bloodthirsty maniac filled with a passion for human slaughter, end quote.
It was shortly after this attack on March 13, 1919, that the infamous letter was sent to the Times-Picayune newspaper. It implied that he was a spirit and that he would kill at any time since he was close to the Angel of Death. I'm going to read an excerpt from the letter now. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 early time, on next Tuesday night, March 1919, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether region that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much better for you people. One thing is certain, that is, some of you people do not jazz it up on Tuesday night. If there be any, we'll get the X.
The whole letter is as weird as the excerpt. I suggest you guys give it a read. It's on our Facebook page, and we'll add it to a link so you guys can find it easily. That being said, on March 19th, jazz music flowed from the people's residences, dance halls, and bands were played at jazz parties. And that night, nobody was killed. But that wasn't the end of the Axeman.
On August 10th, another grocer, Steve Boca, was attacked in his bedroom. He woke that night with a dark figure standing over him, bringing an axe down on his head. Suffering only a single blow, Steve again, after regaining consciousness, ran to the neighbor's house, where he had collapsed. The neighbor got him help, but Steve, like the others, was unable to describe the man, as it was too dark.
The Axeman kept coming. On September 2nd, the Axeman visited William Carson. But Mr. Carson was ready. He fired several shots at the intruder. And the killer ran out the broken door, leaving his axe behind.
Awesome. I'm all for being able to protect your home and yourself.
Yes.
Good for him. But too bad he didn't hit him, though, because the Axeman struck again on September 3rd. He broke into the home of Sarah Lawman, a young woman who lived alone. She was discovered by her neighbors, who found her lying unconscious in her bed, bleeding from the head and missing several of her teeth. She survived, and again, she was unable to describe the man.
Like the other scenes, nothing was taken. And also, the bloody axe was found in the front lawn. There was one more attack in New Orleans by the Axeman, and it was on October 27th, 1919. Mike Pepitone, a grocer, was the last victim of the Axeman, and he died from a blow to the head from an axe. He left his wife and their six children behind.
The Axeman was never caught, nor seen again in New Orleans. I want to dedicate this podcast to the victims of the Axeman.
Like us,
follow us,
and let us know if you celebrate Mardi Gras or if you even came to Louisiana to celebrate.
Thank you for tuning in, and until next time,
be relentless, be unstoppable, be the weird.